From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour began with a trip. Tanya Dehoney is a retired attorney from Texas who now lives in Paris. As she told the New York Times, she values sustainability initiatives and she tries to incorporate them in many aspects of her life. That holds true when it comes to travel. So when she was planning a tour in Morocco in 2019, she searched for a company that was more environmentally and socially responsible. Her research led her to a company called Intrepid Travel. Intrepid Travel is what's called a B Corp. It earned its certification from B Lab, a global nonprofit that certifies B Corps. It's the letter B. And according to B Lab, businesses that receive certifications must abide by standards, policies, tools, and programs that shift the behavior, culture, and structural underpinnings of capitalism. B Lab's data shows there are more than 6,300 B Corps in the world now, and more than 2,000 of them are in the United States and Canada. But when you think about how many companies there are around the world, more than 300 million, B Corps remain just a drop in a big bucket. People committed to ethical business practices say the process of earning a B Corp certification is valuable, but not simple. It can take years, it can take a lot of money, and there are issues with raising awareness of both about the certification and also spreading the word among consumers about the model and the movement. Critics and advocates say there are issues with greenwashing and so-called green fatigue. They also say there are challenges with consumers being willing to pay a little more in some cases to support a B Corp over a business that has not been certified. So what does it really mean? How does it work? Why does it matter? How can ethical business practices transform a business landscape? I told our guests that they have a simple charge this hour. Convince everyone that capitalism can still do good things. You got 50 minutes. Here we go. And we're going to find out if they're right. I'm mostly kidding, but sort of. I mean, let's face it, the board chair and the co-founder of the Rochester chapter of Conscious Capitalism is Andrew Brady and believes very strongly that capitalism can do better. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being
here. Yes, indeed. Always glad to be here.
George McConaughey is sitting right next to Andrew. George is COO of Green Spark Solar. George, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Kathy Turiano is the co-owner of Joe Bean Coffee Roasters, who you heard Mayor Evans invoke with praise last hour. You didn't even hear that, did you?
I did not. Oh, my goodness. I can't believe I missed that.
He praised your coffee even though he's not a coffee drinker. He says he knows it's good, but he stopped drinking coffee when he was 25.
Oh, all right. Well, I'll take it. Welcome. I'll take that praise.
And Lindsay Tarnoff is with us, founder and director of education and community education at Laughing Gull Chocolates. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Happy to be here.
So, Andrew, it's easy for people to get a little cynical or to be suspicious of a designation that takes time, sometimes money, and people might sort of say, okay, you probably buy a B Corp license and call yourself an ethical business and be done with it. Does it have meaning? Does it have meaning to you?
Yeah, so conscious capitalism has always been kind of this ethos of how to do business. They've always been more broad, and there's a lot of different certifications out there. I think probably inarguably B Corp is the best, the hardest to game the system, right? Where there's is the greenwashing or the purpose washing, the kinds of things that you're mentioning. B Corp is a really comprehensive assessment, and they really have to prove it. And maybe we'll talk a little bit later about some of the companies that are still doing great things that maybe aren't B Corps because either they're too small or the reporting requirements or things like that. But when it is stamped with a B Corp, you really can trust it.
Well, and I want to ask our guests, maybe right out from the start, I'll just ask them to kind of tell a little story about how they ended up going in that direction and what that entailed. And then we're going to kind of have Andrew take us a little bit of through this accelerated B Corp 101, kind of a little course for learners, for those of us in the public who don't know much about them. I'll start with George, COO of Green Spark Solar. You've been a B Corp for how long?
We first got our certification in 2015. We're a 22-year-old business, so we operated without that certification. I would say mostly successfully from a in regards to
GreenSpark's been around for 22 years.
That's correct.
Yeah, how old is Kevin Schulte? He's much older than he looks.
He's 26, I believe.
Kevin's probably listening right now. He's a much older man. That's okay. It happens to all of us.
Yeah.
So 2015, so about 9 years ago.
Yeah, yeah, and it is. I think everyone always cautions me to not talk about how hard the certification process is. With the B Corp certification, but it's challenging. It's rigorous. I would be very surprised to meet or to see a company that goes through that just to greenwash themselves and doesn't have the real sort of bona fide sort of purpose at the heart of what they're trying to do.
And when people ask you, well, what did you have to do? I mean, is there a short kind of description of what that process was like for GreenSpark?
The first time we went through the certification, it took us about 11 months. You know, I think really what drove us and sort of inspired us to go down that path was, you know, I think kind of two things. One being we wanted to bake into our DNA sort of our sort of moral core values, the sort of purpose that was at the heart of what we were trying to do. And then I think the second reason there is we really felt like the structure that the certification and the sort of impact assessment provided us was a good way to think about our business and think about ways to improve our business. So, you know, I think both of those things, we still find value in that, you know, sort of depends on who you ask in our building, you know, what they really value in B Corp. If it is that, that sort of means and methods of how we really quantify the impact we have and sort of how we're trying to improve our business, our marketing team and our communications team and our recruiting team especially really values the outward facing sort of benefits of a B Corp, even though, you know, the knowledge of that in the sort of consumer world, you know, is still growing and has a ways to grow.
What could you have done differently that would have allowed you to operate without being a B Corp that might have been a little bit easier?
Oh, geez, there's lots of things. You know, I think that part of the challenge that we have, so we are, as I said, we're a 22-year-old business. We have around 130 full-time employees. I think one of the challenges we face every day is how to scale all of the sort of informal things we do as a company, right, that we've done for 22 years. How do you make sure the new employee that, you know, Kevin Schulte and myself have never met and may not meet for months and months until after they're working for us. And how do we instill the purpose and the mission that really drives us? And so I think the structure of B Corp allows us to sort of codify some of those things and codify the purpose. And, you know, when Kevin decides he's going to leave and live in Puerto Rico, right, the company can live on and it can continue on that mission. That's, you know, sort of the reason for being.
Kathy Turiano is the co-owner of Joe Bean Coffee Roasters, which has existed for how long now?
2007.
17 years.
17 years.
How long have you been a B Corp?
2022, so about 2 years.
And why did you decide to pursue it in the first place? And then can you take me through what that was like?
Sure. So I think for us, it was about a commitment to our customers and really showing them full transparency about how we source and what we source. And being able to get a third party to verify and to kind of ensure them that what we say we're doing, we're doing. And what our farmers say they're doing, they're actually doing as well. So we are almost an entirely direct trade from farm to roaster company at this point. About 80% of what we roast is directly from farm. And most people don't really know what that means either. So when we initially first started out as roasting, we were fair trade certified. And fair trade certified, if you're not familiar with it, right now it's about $1.40 a pound is the standard for fair trade certification. And that is not a livable wage for farmers. They can't even really cover their costs at $1.40. And we were kind of unaware of a lot of that aspect of it until we met our first farming partner, became our first direct trade farming partner, and began to understand fair trade from their perspective. And so
and they didn't have good things to say?
They did not. you know, $1.40 doesn't even go to the farmer. In general, there's usually about 5 to 6 layers between coffee roaster and coffee farmer. So that $1.40 generally goes to intermediaries and brokers and importers and exporters. And So we began kind of walking down a what has been like a 10-year process for us of transforming all of our farming relationships to be direct trade. So which is a lot of work. You have to go and meet farmers. You have to ensure that it's a reliable relationship. They trust you. You trust them. You ensure how, you know, they're actually, their farming practices are what you adhere to as a business. And but in the long run, it's the viability of your company, right? Like we can't grow coffee. And so, you know, we're really reliable. You know, we really rely on what we're sourcing to be our branding and to represent us. And so however, there is no direct trade certification. And so there is no way to talk about it directly to our customers. So most direct trade roasters inevitably go down the B Corp road so that you're having somebody else come in and say, okay, how are you sourcing? Generally by 4 to 5 times, we're paying about 4 to 5 times above fair trade wages.
So you're paying, let's see, $1.40 was fair trade wages.
Mm-hmm.
I was told there'd be no math. $5.50 to $6 to $7.
Yeah, that's normal. Yes.
And how do farmers in those situations do? Much better?
They're profitable. You know, I remember going years ago and seeing the founder of Stonyfield Yogurt talking about how important it is if you're an agricultural business to protect your sources and to ensure that they don't just make a, you know, minimum wage, that they actually make they're a profitable business, because if they're a profitable business, then they're going to stay in business. They're going to pass it down to the next generation and then that and the next generation. Most of the farming partners that we work with are third and fourth generation. But there really truly is a crisis going on in specialty coffee. And that crisis is that if that third or fourth generation coffee farmer isn't the family business doesn't make money, they leave and they go to the call centers, you know, that are popping up all over the third world, you know, coffee growing areas. And so we want to ensure that they actually stay as coffee farmers and that they produce really high quality product.
What else went into becoming a B Corp? Anything else?
In what way?
Well, I mean, you got B Corp certification in 2022, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
So anything else that we missed that you had to do before you got that thumbs up?
Well, it's a long process. For us in particular, we were kind of in the agricultural lane. So I think there's different lanes that you can be in as a B Corp. So because we were in the agricultural lane, we actually had to not just talk about us as a company, but to show our farm what our farming partners are doing at the farm level. So how are they, you know, many of them are biodynamic farmers. So how are they dealing with, you know, waste? How are they dealing with pesticides or not pesticide, like all of that we actually had to get from our farming partner, as well as how are they paying their workers. So there was really kind of three layers for us.
Can I ask you to be as blunt as you can be? So if I see fair trade on the label, should I think it's bogus? Do you think it's bogus?
So I don't know other industries. Fair trade covers a lot of industries.
Okay. So you're in your slice of the world. I understand.
When it comes to coffee, $1.40 a pound is not a living wage.
Doesn't sound very fair to me.
It's not. It's
okay.
It's an organization. I hate to slam fair trade because it has done so much good over the years that it has been in existence. And it probably has done a lot of good in other industries. I don't know other industries. I know coffee. But we were fair trade certified, and then the farmer has to adhere to fair trade certification. No farmers that we work with are in that program.
Okay. And by the way, last point, I'm not trying to kind of trap you into sort of – the reason I ask that is this. What I really want to know is, do you think fair trade started off as something that was making a better difference and then just didn't evolve?
Yes.
And has now
yes.
not kept up with the needs of paying fair wages, et cetera?
Yes.
So it's not necessarily bogus.
Yes.
It has just – it is not –
I think it traps the farmers into a minimum.
Okay.
And I think any time that – if there's – as a business owner – you want to be able to look at your own costs. You want the industry has evolved and changed, and they now see their farms as businesses, and so they want profitable businesses. So they want to be able to look at their own costs, their and what they want is margins, and then they want to be able to negotiate those costs. So anytime you put a ceiling on those things, I don't think it's good for the business, just like it wouldn't be good for any of us.
All right. Lindsay is the founder and director of education and community education at Laughing Gull Chocolates, which is based where, Lindsay?
We're right here in Rochester on East Main Street.
Okay. You've been around for how long?
We have been in Rochester in the North Winton Village just over 6 years. We've been in existence, started as a hobby about 10 years.
Okay. And why a B Corp?
So Laughing Gull Chocolates has always been a business for good. We've always been a socially conscious business. It's part of our DNA. It's inherent to who we are. And it was actually a conversation with Kathy 2-3 years ago, somewhere in the middle of COVID. And she had just gotten certified and was kind of just talking a little bit about it. And it sound, you know, we've looked at certifications in the past. Chocolate is similar to coffee in that it is an agricultural product. You know, we use cacao beans, or we use chocolate from cacao beans that comes from all developing countries all throughout the equator. And fair trade is an issue, right? As Kathy just mentioned, as we just talked about. And we wanted to go further. And so from the beginning, we have been going further. But the B Corp certification sounded like a really good way to quantify what we were doing and to communicate our commitment to all of the positive ways we were changing the world to our community.
I mean, this is such a bummer about fair trade, but it's very important to hear this. I'm grateful that you're telling us this story. So thank you for that. Now, do your customers... do you feel like they understand it? Do you communicate what it means to be a B Corp to them?
I think we've started. I think we have a long way to go. I think that most of our customers are our customers because we have really good chocolate, and also because we have that commitment to our community, whether it's the farmers across the country, across the world, whether it's, you know, the giving that we do, whether it's all of the local partnerships that we have. And that's an added bonus. And so some people seek us out because of the good that we do and then try our chocolate and think, oh, this is amazing. And sometimes it's vice versa.
Is it fair to say that if you were fair trade but not B Corp, you'd be paying less?
Absolutely.
Okay. And is it also fair to say that there are some economics professors who would tell you that you should probably just find a way to lower your bottom line? You are in a business.
I mean, of course, it depends what their values are. I also want to say that just because there are some fair trade companies that are B Corps. There are some fair trade companies.
They're both. Okay, sure.
Yeah. And so it's not because we're a B Corp that our chocolate costs more. It's because we are paying above and beyond fair trade. It's because we have these other local partnerships with small businesses, local
but
businesses.
But that's a choice that you're making.
It is.
You don't have to do that.
Correct.
Okay. Why are you so bad at business? Let me phrase this a different way. Do you believe that you can survive and thrive despite the choice to pay more and live your values?
I do. It's a commitment that we've made. It's, yes.
Yeah, and I would.
Can I add to that?
You all like that question. Everybody wants it. Go around the table.
Okay.
Go ahead, George, first.
Okay.
You know, I think that it's a sort of false choice there.
Yes.
You know, of whether you can be a good business person or you can be ethical or sort of purpose driven. You know, GreenSpark has been, you know, one of the fastest growing companies in the Rochester region a couple times in the last 5 years, right? We've been in that number one spot. I think all that means to me is that's exciting. Growth is fun and stressful and turns my hair gray. You know, the top workplaces, right, is another award that sort of measures, you know, another part of our business. And I think we want to be a multifaceted business that way. We want to measure success, you know, in ways beyond our bottom line. We certainly believe that without profit, like, we can't pursue purpose. Like, that's, I think, the beauty of benefit corporations is they recognize that. That you need to make money, you need to be sustainable.
Just because you're a B Corp, you're not the self-immolating, no profit, you know, living this impecunious life.
We like to do things the hard way, that's for sure. I think there are easier ways to run a business, but that doesn't feel right to us. That's not the kind of people we are. That's not the kind of business people that we aspire to be.
Kathy?
Well, and I totally agree. I think that, once again, sourcing, you know, just speaking from this agricultural aspect, protecting your sources and making sure that your sources can actually stay in business is good business. It's not bad business. It's good business. And ensuring that they can pass it on to the next generation and that they, you know, can work with you on a long-term basis. You can rely on them. I know a lot of roasters had difficulty during COVID sourcing, and we did not. We have long-term relationships with our farming partners, and they know that we fight for them and they fight for us. And we have worked with them, you know, because we have these long-standing relationships. We've actually worked with them to get sort of different tiers of pricing so that we could build a wholesale program and a co-pack program, and then also kind of a higher tiered level of coffee. But once again, all of those only come out of strong relationships, and they only build relationships with you if they know that you're actually want them to thrive.
Well, and, you know, Lindsay, is it also a situation where you could lower your cost by doing it a different way, and you could maybe lower your prices? Are you asking your consumers to pay a little bit more, and is that part of the equation?
If you are asking if Laughing Gull chocolates is more expensive than what you can buy at the grocery store, yes, it has to be, because, and without getting too much into all of the trade and labor issues, the chocolate that you can get at the grocery store is essentially being subsidized by forced labor in other countries. And that's, you know, a pretty blunt
way.
Can
you say that again?
Yeah. So the chocolate that you can find at most grocery stores, you know, kind of the bigger commercial products, are purchasing chocolate that is harvested and cultivated by forced labor throughout the world.
Every time I eat a Snickers bar. Seriously, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and that's documented in the Washington Post. That's documented in all different kinds of docuseries and media. But yes.
I'd gladly pay more.
And most coffee farmers live in poverty. That's mm-hmm. just a statistic. So very similar.
Very similar.
So I'm really glad we're having this conversation. If just joining us, we're talking about what it means to be a B Corp. And our guests come from different sectors. Andrew Brady is the co-founder of the Rochester chapter of Conscious Capitalism. Lindsay Tarnoff is from Laughing Gull Chocolates. Kathy Turiano from Joe Bean Coffee Roasters. George McConaughey from Greenspark Solar. And they've made choices to do things differently. Frankly, it's tough to hear this. I'm wearing clothes. I don't know where they were made. I don't know the conditions that these clothes were made in. I would love to tell you that I do, and I track everything that I buy, and I know exactly the wages and the conditions of everyone who made them, and I don't. And I wish we had a system where it was easier to do that. I do think what you're describing gives me at least a better handle on how to do that with food. And food's still really hard. It's hard to go to Wegmans. It's hard to go to Tops and just say, yeah, how are these animals treated? Or what were the labor conditions of the farmers? It's hard to know. So I'm grateful. And that's partially why we're having that. Now, Andrea, let me ask you on the business side of the ledger. You know, part of what you also do in your job is leadership training. And I think that sometimes entails helping companies see different ways to do things, or maybe setting aside assumptions about the only way to do a profitable or successful business, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It was funny when you were talking about that earlier. It reminded me of, it's a few years old now, but there was a study done of business school graduates and basically the number of students going into business school that had some kind of purpose-driven or conscious capitalism or however you want to term it, mindset for doing business, and how more or less that was beaten out of them by the time that they graduated and they were, you know, trained to just look at the finances in the short term and the quarterly numbers.
The quarterly. I love the quarterlies. Nothing like the next quarterly to dominate your life.
Yeah. And so that, you know, when you are just making trade-offs can be, they're, it's really easy to make a trade-off. You know, we're going to not follow the very best practices in the short run because it's going to make us a quick buck, those sort of things. It's a lot harder to try to find in conscious capitalism what they call the win-win-win-win-wins, right? So where all of the stakeholders are benefiting, and that's the suppliers as we've talked a little bit about. That's the customers, the employees, the environment, all of these different stakeholders that, in my belief, in most of the research seems to point to this, that the longer term your time horizon for making decisions, the more often all of those stakeholders thriving are going to be in your best interest. You know, that's a lot of what we talked about. You know, you want you don't want to, even if maybe this year you could squeeze a little bit better prices out of your farmers, but then that puts them out of business next year. Well, that's going to put you in a tough spot. You know, so being able to think long term and think about how the decisions you're making are having an impact is really important.
I haven't been to business school recently. I don't think that is necessarily the ethos that's being taught in a lot of business schools.
You're absolutely right, and that's why a lot of those numbers come out that way, or those surveys come out that way, is that the students are taught a different way of doing business and how to prioritize things. In fact, a lot of the clients that I have, as you're mentioning, and some of the leadership training that I do, but also just the leaders that most inspire me, and including those around the table here that have a different ethos for doing business. Many of them either didn't go to business school or don't consider themselves business people. Like, oh, I never really thought about myself that way, but then I got passionate about coffee or chocolate or whatever, and I started this. And so they kind of come from more of an outsider perspective, which I think is really important. And then we're mentioning some of the impacts on the farmers. The only other kind of thing that I wanted to mention from the conversation that was going around the table was similar things happen in terms of the ways that one of the reasons Walmart keeps their prices so low is because of the ways that they pay or don't pay their employees, right? And the ways that they squeeze every last penny out of their suppliers.
What was the Walmart story I just saw? I saw another Walmart story this week.
Yeah, well, I this is from a couple of years ago, but I remember seeing that in many states, the people that are the most people on SNAP benefits or different kinds of assistance programs are employees of places like Walmart and McDonald's. So again, you're low prices are being subsidized essentially by your own tax dollars in the long run. But I'd much rather support by paying a higher price to an organization that was doing well by as many of their stakeholders as possible. You know, their customers, their community, the employees, and the environment. And that's why transparency is so important, including B Corps that are able to go through all of these different things. But also, I think just the general rise of kind of conscious capitalism, even before B Corp, ever existed, was the fact that we all now have a recording device in our pocket. And, you see, one of the kind of transformative things, I guess, for me in my own, I guess, conscious evolution as a kid was I remember seeing, Nike that, has this brand image for all of the wonderful things that they do and the excellence. And then it was, sometime in the 90s, you see all this expose about the sweatshops and those sorts of things. And so I think those sorts of things are harder to hide now, that we all have a recording device in our pocket that we can send those pictures around the world and things. But I do think that transparency is a huge piece of it, and really why more people hopefully are doing a little bit of that research, although I recognize, as you were saying, how difficult it can be. You're reminding me of The Good Place, right? Where even just buying a tomato, there's how many different decisions and research do I have to do every
person? But that doesn't mean we should be paralyzed or stop caring.
Absolutely.
And I know you're not saying that. But I think acknowledging the complexity of what everybody at this table does, but not giving up because it feels paralyzing, is really important. And I don't want to shock you about Walmart, but there's some news on Walmart. In fact, regular Walmart shoppers, according to ABC News, may still be eligible for a $500 payout as part of Walmart settling for $45 million. Now, Walmart says they didn't do anything wrong, but they will agree to pay $45 million after a lawsuit alleged that their checkout machines have been inflating the weight of groceries and charging customers more. The suit claims they inflate food weight, they mislabel produce and more. to nickel and dime, sometimes a nickel more per customer, sometimes 80 cents more. Boy, that adds up. And Walmart went, what? Us? No. We will pay, but no. But we'll pay. Go away, please.
So and I think that really speaks to some of those short-term financial incentives that I think really drive.
Yeah, what can we get away with, right?
What people think of business, right? And I think what people going into business school are taught or what they feel like success looks like as a business person is about a stock price. It is about, you know, quarterly bonuses. And I think the folks at this table are trying to change that perception. And I think B Corp has created a way, a shortcut, right, for people to look at and say, okay, these people, these businesses have done the work to hold themselves accountable. And I think one of the interesting things about the certification and the recertification process is it keeps getting more difficult, right? Like, so no matter where you're starting from, the next time you recertify, the questions change and sort of what they're sort of forcing you to sort of poke your nose into those sort of dark corners of your business that maybe you don't want to know about, but you're held accountable to that. So I think for us in the solar business, I think in that same sense of, you know, forced labor issues, the entire solar industry had to, you know, face that problem that the majority of cheap solar product was coming out of China and it was being manufactured by, you know, forced labor. And so I think that reckoning, like we faced that and had to answer that on paper with, you know, how we're accounting for that as a business, how we can sleep at night as people, right? And how we're going to change our practices to affect that. And so in a global supply chain, right, that solar is, we are still forced to go down that path and say, who are our manufacturers? And what do they pay their people? And how does that
and
get
to us? And
do
you have good answers for that now?
It's difficult, right? I think we have answers to say that we can't rely on companies and countries that are not transparent. And if they are not being transparent, I think it's a pretty good indication, you know, that of their trustworthiness in these kinds of decisions.
I want to take a phone call from Doug, I think, who's been waiting. Hi, Doug, go ahead.
Well, good afternoon. I was going to clarify the real advantage to businessmen of having a B corporation. Historically, the normal C corporation, which has been evolving for centuries, has in the courts, the standard is held that the purpose of such a corporation is to provide the largest benefit to shareholders, to enhance shareholder value. And this is the ethos that is being promoted in business schools. That's the law. And if somebody has a corporation and they're doing a lot of good things, an uninterested shareholder can take them to court. Oh, you're squandering corporate resources. Your purpose is to maximize shareholder value. You're not doing it. And so the B Corporation concept, B stands for benefit, was created fairly recently to remove that legal standard. So that now, if it is a certified B Corporation, it's a separate category of incorporation. Once you have that status, and you want to do good things, that's not held against you in terms of undercutting shareholder value. You are expressly and explicitly permitted to do good things under the rubric of a B Corporation. And I commend everybody who is doing that. They're not going to be held to the same kind of tough standard that the old-fashioned corporation directors would be.
Anyone want to respond to that? Thank you, Douglas. Go ahead, Kathy.
Well, it's absolutely true. So, you know, one of the reasons, if you look at the history of B Corp, I think it started 2007, maybe somewhere in there. Yeah, 2006. Okay. the founder had a large sports apparel company, from what I understand. And being it, you know, only being accountable to the shareholders was what was frustrating to this particular person. And that was sort of his catalyst when he looked around at some of the companies that were like Ben & Jerry's and Patagonia at the time, and you know, some of the companies that were being accountable in different ways, he was inspired to actually sell that company and then create B Corp eventually. So
I'm sorry, I was signaling to the booth there.
I saw that.
I didn't mean to cut you off there, Kathy.
No, that's okay. Yeah. I think he's absolutely right. It is taking, if you think about it, if the shareholders are the only, you know, B Corp talks a lot about stakeholders in your company, mm-hmm. and they widen that. So what are the stakeholders in your company? They're your employees, your customers, your vendors, your community. So I think they widen it to not just be the people that actually own stock.
Go ahead, Lindsay.
And to that point, I mean, he's absolutely right. And Kathy, you are right. But what I think is most interesting, I was, you know, we've always been a business for good and always had those values. But I was looking at the Harvard Business Review recently, and there was I think it was a 2021 source that says that 77% of current consumers want to purchase from other companies who are doing good, who are changing the world in a good way. And so I think the general public wants to support these businesses, and I think it's important and our responsibility to get the word out that there are good businesses, mm-hmm. that there are other companies that are making a difference and changing the world.
Okay. George?
Yeah. You know, I would just add to that, you know, we've you know, recently gone through a capital raise, you know, effort, you know, to help us continue to grow. And I think despite the, you know, our sort of commitment to being a B Corp, we certainly felt and heard specific pushback from investors, right? Directly to what Doug was saying, that they wanted us to make sure we were focused on profitability and returning, you know, their money and not to be distracted by the other sort of purpose and you know, sort of people parts of our business. So I think despite the theoretical legal protections, there are a lot of forces that I think continue to push on you know, the kind of business decisions that, you know, conscious business people want to be making.
You want to weigh in on that, Andrew?
Really briefly. It's actually, there's a great book that I read by a Cornell law professor, Go Big Red, Lynn Stout.
Did you just sneak in a Go Big Red in there?
The shareholder value myth, how putting shareholders first harms investors, corporations, and the public. And she actually looked through case law and found that it's actually a myth you have to put those stockholders first and maximize the corporate profits, that there was no basis in that in case law. And yet at the same time, I do think that B Corps, or, you know, those that are public benefit corporations that do have that, are very explicit about how they want to balance the needs of all stakeholders, is really important. The other thing that I was thinking of as everyone was talking was how Etsy was a B Corp, and they were among the first to go public, which was, you know, like a big thing, a big challenge. Like, wow, this is kind of going mainstream. And after, I don't know how many years it was, but after going public, they basically folded to the interests of Wall Street and didn't recertify to be a B Corp.
So Etsy used to be a B Corp and is no longer?
Correct. Huh. And you can see that even if anyone, any of the listeners ever use Etsy, you can kind of see the degradation, I guess, over the last several years in terms of how it used to be, you know, for handmade goods. And then they widened what they called handmade. And, you know, there's all kinds of other things going on there. And also from different things that I've read, the internal culture, you know, they've lost a lot of employees who connected with this purpose-driven mission. And, you know, once they became a public corporation, a lot of that culture started to deteriorate. A lot of the benefits that they had were also lost. And so, you know, that's another way to show, yes, it is very hard to be a publicly traded company and a B Corp, although it's possible. But again, when you are now seeing, oh, we were committed to this and now not so much, they can't really, you know, I bet there's a lot of other companies that maybe started in a more conscious way and it kind of degraded over time, but they were able to kind of hang on to, you know, maybe the marketing message of their purpose. And here you go. Well, you didn't recertify, so you're not living up to it anymore.
How often does recertification have to happen for a B Corp?
Every 3 years.
3 years. Mm-hmm. Every three. Okay. A lot of feedback from listeners. Let me work through. Sarah wants to know, if you're a fair trade coffee farmer and you're getting paid $1.40, what in the world are non-fair trade coffee farmers getting paid? Do you know, Kathy?
No, I don't know. I mean, would say fair trade.
Less than $1.40.
Yeah, I'm, you know, and
poverty wages.
Yes, and don't forget the farmer's not getting $1.40. If fair trade, again, there's generally about 5 to 6 layers in between farmer and roaster. So someone's getting that $1.40, not necessarily the farmer.
Okay, so Sarah, the answer to your question is it's less. It's probably poverty wages.
Yes.
And there are a number of fair trade coffee farmers who are still living on poverty wages.
High numbers.
High numbers. Yes. Most all. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Bob writes to say, I'd love to hear about anything that B Corp credentials requires in terms of employee well-being. Are there any measurable requirements such as a living wage, healthcare coverage, predictable scheduling, physical safety, et cetera? That's Bob. I don't know the answer to that. Anybody want to hit that? If you're a B Corp, do you have to do certain things for employees?
Yeah. You have to do a lot of things. You have to do that intentionally. You have to include your employees in how you're sort of creating some of those benefits and those compensation structures. That I think is a huge part of our sort of strength, I think, as a B Corp in terms of our score, is really our workers. And I think, like Kathy was saying, I think the overall value of B Corps is, in some sense, it's the resiliency that it creates in your business, because you do have that long-term outlook. So I think with Kathy talking about securing her supply chain and thinking about her suppliers in a long term and making sure they are stable and successful, we think about that with our employees in that same framework. And so I think over the last few years, when employees have seen very high levels of attrition and worker dissatisfaction, I think we've been somewhat insulated by that because we've been engaged. We've always, been way ahead of any state or federal minimum wage requirements. We look more at living wage calculations, in order to try to figure out how to fairly compensate people that work for us. And I think despite what our accounting team, may say, we believe that, a dollar of profit is probably a dollar that you haven't paid your employees, right? And so we really sort of intentionally think about, how we're sharing the money we are making, right, and reinvesting that in our business and compensating the people that are actually, doing the hard work, turning bolts.
Kathy and Lindsay, you want to weigh in on what you're paying? Lindsay?
Yeah, we looked at living wage. It looks at your employees' retention. They do look at healthcare benefits. They get into the nitty-gritty. For us, it was an 18-month process. That was broken up a little bit because I had a baby in there. But it's a long process, and they get into every tiny little detail. I'm trying to think of what other they look at.
Yeah. So for us, it was also, obviously we started down the B Corp lane primarily because of our sourcing and our farming, as I'm talking about. However, it also does look at, besides employees, it looks at what are the materials that you're using in your company on a regular basis. We're now in process and have been for the last year in moving over to all compostable, all recyclable bagging and mailers. Not a small project, but I think we wanted to be there anyway, but certainly being a B Corp sort of nudges you in that direction, as I'm realizing we'll have to recertify next year. So
they also, for us, they look at what we are donating. So donating is a huge part of again, like who, what we do. And so we've committed to giving at least 2% of our proceeds to local organizations. We have a line that we call, you know, Giving Through Chocolate, and we give 20% of that line to a few different organizations. And so, again, the community is a big part of it. And there was one other thing that I just forgot. How much local you buy?
How much? Okay. Yes, Andrew?
Sourcing. Yeah. So the assessment itself, you know, covers a variety of different areas. You got to, you know, meet a certain threshold. So, you know, there's governance, there's workers, community, environment, the customers. How are you having an impact on all these different constituencies and stakeholders? And so, you know, maybe you a certain business might score really highly in one area and less so in the other. But, you know, if you care about it, if the caller or email or care about a certain issue, you know, you can look into, well, how did they do in terms of their score for workers? The only other thing that's I think important to mention, and I'd actually be curious for everyone else around the table, I know that we've been talking about how fair trade failed to evolve. I think B Corp, since they started in 2006, they've been continuously evolving what their criteria were. George mentioned that they raise the bar on you every year, but they're also undergoing, over the last couple of years, their biggest kind of transformation to date of what the certification process actually is, to broaden it, to have some different things going on, and I believe this is the first year of that new process. So I don't know if anyone has had to do that or is looking ahead, but they
that
did.
May be coming for Kathy.
Yeah, I was gonna say we're a little too new for that. So yeah, that'll be our next year. So I'll look at George,
George
and
George,
find out how to do that.
Has it evolved on you, George?
It definitely has, and I think like the other certifications that have been mentioned, you know, fair trade, certified organic, right? Those things evolve and they're become competing standards as well. I think in the B Corp world, there is starting to be some of that sort of dissatisfaction, right? I'm not sure if that's the sort of hipster, you know, sub vibe that, you know, it used to be cool, but it's not anymore. But people are starting to think about, you know, are there other ways that I can achieve these same end goals without supporting the B Corp brand, which is trying to go global, right? And I think there's a lot of value that the B Corp brand provides. And we've talked about that as being a shortcut for consumers, and people need to learn about it, you know, but at the same time, it does impose a cost on businesses as well.
Anything you want to add, Lindsay?
Yeah, I mean, I think B Corp is a brand, and I think that's important to recognize, just like fair trade, and there are lots of other certifications out there. I think for us specifically, it's not an end-all be-all. It doesn't mean, you know, we have the certification and now we're done. We don't have to do any more work. It's something that we are going to continue to assess. We are going to continue to live our values regardless of where the certification goes.
And let me just say to Bob, in case you're wondering, does a B Corp certification mean every employee has to be paid a baseline of at least X? No. At least what I'm looking at, the five criteria that our guests have mentioned, governance, workers' rights, community impact, environmental impact, stewardship of customers, that could evolve. But the overall score has to be 80 or above to pass the B-Lab's impact assessment. So as Andrew said, you may do well in one, little less than the other, but as long as your combined score is 80 or above, you can get the certification. It's not every worker must have this health benefit or this wage, et cetera, although that matters and that will factor. And then you can look up the individual scores, Andrew, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you can break it down and you know, you can do a little bit of extra research, and that's part of, you know, part of the challenge, I guess, for these businesses is that there is a cost in your time and in your effort to record and have all these things kind of audited and everything, but it can be a great value for people to check out. The only other thing I'll mention is it was maybe 5-ish years ago now, but Conscious Capitalism locally partnered with some of the B Corps and what we were calling Measure Up Finger Lakes, which was an encouragement for a lot of businesses, whether or not you wanted to go through the full process and you know, go through all the auditing, you could go online and you could just kind of take the assessment from, you know, without having to record everything, but you know, you more or less know how are we doing on XYZ, and you'd see what your score would be, and that could just give you whether or not you want to go through the effort, or you see that you're ready or you're not ready. Or even if you don't have an intention
to. Can people still do that?
It's just it's a different way to go on there, see what the assessment has, see how we're doing and where we might want to improve.
Where would you urge small businesses, business owners, large businesses, medium businesses?
So yeah,
where should they go?
You can go on the B Corp website. You can look what kinds of questions there would be, and that's actually something that fizzled a little bit with COVID and everything, but something that I think is really important, and we would love to maybe partner with some of these other organizations in terms of creating that learning community, right? We're all on this journey together in terms of how we can, help each other and maybe show each other that this is even possible, but then also kind of strategize on how to make it happen.
COVID. A couple questions about wages as well. I'll just say as we get ready to wrap here, even though there's not hard and fast dollar rules in a B Corp, there's probably not a whole lot of B Corps where the CEO is making 300 or 400 times what the average employee makes. Is that fair to say? Probably not.
For sure. Yeah.
300 or 400 times.
I mean, I think the there are not minimum standards in terms of what you pay,
right.
But if you're not paying your employees well, you're probably not going to be a B Corp, right? If you're not conscious towards that, that part of mm-hmm. your company and the sustainability and the resiliency that creates, we have set, specific caps. On what those ratios between sort of lowest paid and highest paid employees can be at sort of 4 to 5, X, is where we've set that. But we, I think for us, we've always kind of thrown the sort of state minimum wage stuff out the window. That stuff is kind of ridiculous to us. It's not a living wage. For us, we try to measure sort of total compensation, total benefits, and think of, right, like our average employee over our 130 sort of full-time employees, average annual compensation is around $70,000.
Andrew Brady, where would you want people to learn more about the Rochester chapter of Conscious Capitalism, B Corps, or anything else that's important?
ConsciousCapitalismROC.org, and I'm sure you can Google search B Corps and hopefully look for the little stamp of B Corp whenever you're buying things and be a conscious consumer.
Thank you for all the guidance this hour. That's Andrew Brady, George McConaughey, Kathy Turiano, Lindsay Tarloff from Greenspark, Joe Bean, and Laughing Gull Chocolates. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
B Corps all. From all of us at Connections, thanks for listening. We're back with you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.